Okay, thanks a lot for inviting me. I will begin with generality so that people can come in slowly. I was not thinking about you. For example, I work on the real numbers here, so I'm lucky. I can just use the Lebesgue measure. I don't have to construct a measure, and I can use Fubini's theorem. I don't have to prove a Fubini's theorem. But why are we interested in integrals at all? Well, this is another generality, but integrals are central in many areas of mathematics, as we saw a lot of examples in Lezer's talk. Often, or sometimes, the study of integrals helps to understand other parts of mathematics, and also often problems in mathematics can be formulated in terms of integrals, like equalities of integrals. So in this talk and in a lot of my work, the goal is to understand integrals, for example, of subanalytic functions, semi-algebraic functions, to understand Fourier transforms, or as François considered, there often occur constructible functions. And I don't know if it's useful to model theory, but at least the flavor is similar to model theory. In model theory, you often look at certain structure and you want to prove quantifier elimination, like for the real numbers or the Presburger structure. And here I look at a certain class of functions and I want to understand integrals. Do they get more complicated if I integrate some variables out? So that's somehow, if you can integrate variables out without things getting complicated, this is the same flavor as having quantifier elimination that you can project down and your sets do not become more complicated. So it's not real, you don't give new results in model theory, but I think the flavor is similar, and sometimes applications of model theory are used. And what are the possible examples that integrals can occur in? Like Lazare give the example of the Langlands program. Often in singularity theory, one studies asymptotic behavior of Fourier transforms for the variables going to infinity. I will also treat some topics of transcendental number theory and some examples in number theory in general. So my talk will consist of two parts. The largest part will be just with the Lebesgue measure on the real numbers. And the second smaller part will be mainly providing examples of a number theoretical nature where I consider integrals. Does it work? Yeah, probably. Over local fields in general. And in all these cases, I am lucky because on local fields, I have automatically some analog of the Lebesgue measure, some Haar measure, because these are locally compact groups. So I don't need to construct any measures. It will all be on a different level that I will work. Let me first introduce you to some Concewitz-Zagier setting, which is very elementary and very nice. It can be found in a paper in IHES, the publication de l'IHES. It's quite recent. And they give a nice framework to consider periods. Of course, periods already exist for a long time, but this is somehow a more model theoretical framework to look at periods. And it all works with semi-algebraic sets defined over Q, so given by ring formulas with parameters coming from the rational numbers. And I will consider subsets of Rn, so everything is embedded in Rn, that has, and I use a Lebesgue measure often on Rn. What is a period? It's a number that can be obtained as a definite integral over a bounded set, or the support of the function should be contained in a bounded semi-algebraic set with respect to any number of variables where the function you integrate and the domain you integrate are semi-algebraic and defined over Q. This way you get a countable algebra of numbers. So you can multiply two numbers, two periods, that's basically just an integral with more variables. You can sum up periods, that is the bilinearity of integrals.
Is that all the bounded?
Yeah, actually, to a period is a definite integral, so the support and the f should be bounded. Yeah. This is a countable subset of the real numbers subalgebra, but it's not so much known about it. For example, the number e, the natural base of the logarithm, is it a period or not? That's an open question. Of course, the number pi is a period because it's just integrating. It comes up if you integrate the line element on a circle as the length of a circle. That's semi-algebraic, of course. And I have, just to give you some flavor of the big conjectures about periods, given a period, is it decidable when a period is transcendental over Q? Of course, all the elements of the rational of the algebraic closure of Q are periods, because these are semi-algebraic over Q. But can you say that it's transcendental? The input would be the data defining the integral, and then the output would be yes or no, whether corresponding to alpha being transcendental or algebraic. That's of course very hard. And slightly more general, if you have n numbers, can you decide whether the transcendence degree is n? Is it more difficult than Schanuel's conjecture? It seems of an equal difficulty, and it's equally interesting. You can generalize the concept of periods slightly to a concept which I call period functions. It's not studied in the literature, just ad hoc here, which is a parametrized integral where everything is defined over the rational numbers and is semi-algebraic. Again, f should be bounded and the support should be bounded. So this is a parametrized version of periods. Instead of looking at decidability questions, whether two such functions are equal or satisfy a relation, you can also ask yourself the question, what can the function capital I look like? To which algebra can they belong? What kind of function can come up? To give you a lot of interesting integrals are of this form. For example, the logarithm comes up quite easily. If you integrate 1 over y from 1 to x, and x is a number bigger than 0, you get the logarithm of x. That's certainly a transcendental function. It's transcendental over the semi-algebraic functions. And the second kind of new function that can come up is an abelian integral, where this is an abelian integral with a moving boundary. So if x is a fixed number, then it's an actual abelian integral, and this is more like maybe a relative abelian integral. And for many rational numbers x, this is actually supposed to be a transcendental number. Well, not so much is known in transcendental number theory, but very often you get transcendental numbers, or you should get transcendental numbers, but in any case, this function is transcendental over...
It's not exactly the way you wrote this.
It's not bounded?
No, the one above. It's not just f of x, y or something like that.
Oh, well, you can rephrase this as a function of f, comma x, of f of x, comma y, where you take the characteristic function of this domain in your function. Yeah, sorry, I will use this correspondence as I like. I hope that to consider this question, what these period functions can look like, I hope that in some future work I can do something with it, but right now I'm doing some actual work with Aschenbrenner and Rollin, where we work with subanalytic functions instead of semi-algebraic functions. So that's more easy, because integrals of analytic things stay analytic, while as integrals of semi-algebraic things can get weird. But instead of decidability questions, we try to describe the integrals that can come up. So in this example again, the second example would become more easily describable in a subanalytic context, because if x ranges over a bounded set of the real numbers, so say from 0 to 1000, then capital I here is a subanalytic function. So at least second stays more closely to definable functions. But the first example, you get the logarithm, you get not a bounded fragment of the logarithm, you get the whole logarithm. That's certainly not subanalytic. So the framework of subanalytic functions is not closed under integration. When you integrate 1 over y, a new function comes up. For those who don't know, let me define what it is, subanalytic sets. It's built using analytic functions, of course. And it's built in the following way. If you have overconvergent power series, overconvergent on a ball containing this polydisk, then you can cut this analytic function off on the compact polydisk here, and you get the function to the real numbers. And you can extend this function f to a global function from Rn to R, and what you're going to do is you're going to expand the ring language with all these kind of restricted analytic functions. I call them restricted because I cut them off on this.
I don't think this is a definition. You just ask f is a restriction of an analytic function on some neighborhood. Yeah. It's not what is written.
But this is what I take. And then maybe in a few minutes you agree or you don't agree, but and actually what I'm defining is a notion of globally subanalytic sets, and globally standing here, it's somehow a bounded version of or a compact version of subanalytic sets. So what is a subanalytic set? Set X is called subanalytic if it can be obtained by taking finite unions, intersections, complements, and projections of zero loci, of polynomials, and of restricted analytic functions. In other ways to say, it's just the collection of definable sets where you have added all these function symbols. And I think that this is equivalent with what you wanted to say. So this is a notion of globally subanalytic sets. Why? What is the more general notion of subanalytic sets? Well, if you embed this Rm into the projective space, then X becomes subanalytic in the projective space. But that's a technical matter. Here I defined this notion of globally subanalytic, but I will not use the word globally from here on. I have one more example. If I integrate log y, so this was a function that came up naturally, log of y. So let's integrate it once more from boundaries ax, bx, where a and b are subanalytic. Then actually this becomes a polynomial in the logarithm of a, the logarithm of b, and in a and b. So this becomes this function evaluated in these points. So in some sense, you can get the logarithm, but in this example at least, you don't get an iterate of the logarithm. You just get the polynomial in logarithms and the subanalytic functions. This is the inspiration, maybe was the inspiration for work by Rollin, Comte, and Lyon. They studied these kind of functions. And to Aschenbrenner, me, and Rollin, we have a slight generalization, which I will present, of the previous work by Rollin, Comte, and Lyon to the following. Oh, sorry, I have to define. So I will define here yet another notion of constructible functions. So we saw already maybe 7 notions. Now here is the 8th notion. So let X be a subanalytic set. I define an algebra curly C of X. And this is an R algebra of real-valued functions. So it's an R-algebra because you can multiply real-valued functions, you can sum up real-valued functions, generated by 2 kinds of generators, namely by all subanalytic functions, and also by all the logarithms of subanalytic functions, where again, G is subanalytic now in a positive real line to make it well defined. I call this an algebra of constructible functions. And you could do, as in Lezaire's talk, you could also define a capital C of X, where you mod out by things with support of lower dimension to have a notion of almost everywhere. But that's not what I will do. I will also always work with the algebra of constructible functions. And as I showed you already several times, this logarithm of subanalytic functions comes up naturally. If your boundary is subanalytic, then the subanalytic function can occur as an argument of the logarithm. So this is the result. Start with a constructible function in over a parameter space X, which is subanalytic, times some affine space Rm, on which I use the Lebesgue measure. Then there is an integrability condition. And since I didn't mod out, I don't work with capital C, where I mod out by things of low support, I have a very strong kind of integrability condition. I don't have an integrability condition which says for almost all parameters. I have an integrability condition which says that for each x, each parameter x in the space x, the function that I obtain by fixing x is integrable over Rm with respect to the Lebesgue measure. I will give an addendum later which gives more, which gives a way to deal with other situations where you don't have this, but you can transform other situations in this condition. I will show later on. Then the parametrized integral is a constructible function. So what was the previous result by Rollin, Comte, and Lyon? Well, they started with a subanalytic function. And if you start with a subanalytic function, then they showed that the parametrized integral is a constructible function. This is more easy. Well, of course, they had their idea. Well, the idea comes from the Piatti case, actually, from Deneuve's results, where, as François told us, on the Piatti field, you also have constructible functions generated by definable functions and, well, p to the alpha and functions beta. And it's inspired Rollin, Comte, and Lyon, they told me. But why is this more difficult? If you start with a constructible function, why is this more difficult than if you start with a subanalytic function? This I will show in a minute. The proof is similar as in the motivic case or in the Piatti case, namely, if you restrict the integrant to cells, and I draw in a picture which is less nice than Patrick's pictures, but you can partition into cells, and then restricted to cells, subanalytic functions, they become like a monomial times a unit, some kind of small thing times a monomial, and the monomial can have a fractional power, so it's your variables to a fractional power. And of course, it's easy to integrate monomials. Here is an example. Even if you start with a polynomial, you can divide in three cells, and your function on the cells becomes a monomial times something which is close to one. So a unit is here something close to one, and you can say more about the unit. It's close to an analytic function. Let me tell you a bit more about the monomialization, because the same kind of monomialization is used in the Piatic setting and in the motivic setting, but there it's called cell decomposition. If you start with a subanalytic function from your parameter space times the real numbers to R, then after a finite partition onto cells, and after on each cell, you are allowed to do a translation of this form that you subtract from the special variable y, a function only depending on x. Then, up to this partition and this translation, your function becomes a fractional power of y, where if a is negative, if y is negative, then I take the absolute value, not to have a undefined root, times some kind thing which is close to 1 and which is somehow analytic in in quotients of x and y times something only depending on g. And this kind of monomialization process, it's also called preparation results, goes back to Paul Cohen. Then in this form, it was first stated by Lyon and Rollin, and it's generalized to all minimal polynomially bounded structures by Vattenkries and Spiesegger, if I got it right. And we're cheating a little bit here. Then if you apply the monomialization process, you can reduce to integrals of this kind. Of course, the monomialization, let me put it here, is stated for subanalytic functions, but the constructible functions are built up with subanalytic functions. It's the logarithms times subanalytic functions. So you apply this monomialization to all the subanalytic functions that appear in your constructible function. And this monomialization can be applied to finitely many functions f at once. And the translation theta does not depend on your function. It only depends on the cell. So that's a nice thing. So you have this for, you can do this for finitely many functions at once, with a here, a positive natural, and L an integer, because you can have products of logarithms. Then you can do a change of variables that you replace y by y to the power one over p to reduce to the case that a is an integer. That's the essential case. And then you use partial integration, and this allows you to do an induction on the exponents a and l. So it's at the bottom of the proof, you're working very elementarily, just partial integration and induction on the exponents. So the bottom of the proof is elementary calculus. But this is cheating here, because how do you reduce to an integral of this form? Well, this is an integral with respect to one variable, but the main result was an iterated integral. I will put on the main result again. And that's actually a very hard reduction to replace the iterated integral by to make this the essential part, so the integral over one variable. Why? Because this condition says that it's integrable for all parameters, but if you would like to apply Fubini's theorem to consider a multiple integral, you get the condition that it's for almost all variables, parameters integrable. So you need an addendum. You need an addendum. If you have a constructible function, and suppose that for almost all parameters, the function you obtain by fixing the parameter and considering it as a function in the other variables, suppose that this is then integrable, then the bad points can be captured by a subanalytic set of measure zero. So the points where it's not integrable, the bad parameters, they can be contained in a slightly bigger subanalytic set of measure zero. And you can also do this in a parameterized way. So you could put here an x times Rn plus m, and then this would work for all points in x, for almost all points in R to the n. So this as a parameterized version, and this allows you to apply Fubini's theorem. There is another topic that on this reduced question here, I said I could reduce to integral of this form, but actually if you have applied the monomialization process and you have applied this kind of Fubini that you only want to integrate one variable out, you get the parameterized integral of a finite sum of terms of this form. But a finite sum of terms of this form does not mean that you can integrate each term separately. If each term separately is integrable, then of course you can change the integration sign symbol, then you can use the linearity of the integral. But if you have a sum of terms which are not integrable, but maybe the sum is integrable, but sum of the terms is not integrable, you cannot use a linearity of the integral. So you have to control the asymptotics of the terms that occur and really separate the integrable terms and non-integrable terms, and the non-integrable terms, they have to vanish. The coefficient has to be, they have to be zero, actually, so they cannot occur. Anything else to say? Well, similarly, this partial integration, sometimes if you use partial integration, something that comes up is not integrable, and then you're not allowed to use partial integration. So I say here that you use, okay, but that's a minor problem.
So you don't need the log for the bad point? Just the subanalytic?
Well, the log can, I don't claim that the bad points are subanalytic, but they are contained in some bigger subanalytic set. But that's, did I put it somewhere? Addendum here. Here it's really important that it's for almost all. If you skip this, so the point is, the bad points are not subanalytic. okay, let's go to oscillating integrals. First, exponential periods, also in the work by Zagier and Koncevich, and it was also considered before. It's a slight generalization of periods, where you allow for integrals defined over Q in a semi-algebraic way, but also the e to the power some semi-algebraic function comes up. So the integrant is not anymore semi-algebraic, but it's in some sense it's constructed using semi-algebraic functions. And again, you assume that it's a definite integral, everything is bounded. Now the number e is of course becomes is an exponential period. You can generalize to exponential period functions. These are parameterized integrals of the same form. And again, instead of looking at the semi-algebraic functions, we look at the subanalytic functions, and we do descriptive results instead of treating decidability questions, because these are too hard to tackle. And according to Lau van den Ries, these decidability questions can remain open for 500 years. Well, I will not be here to check this. Some new transcendental functions can come up. For example, this very basic kind of exponential function, exponential period function, I'm pretty sure that it is a transcendental function. Why? If x goes to infinity, you get an asymptotic expansion. You can look at an asymptotic expansion, and this is a diverging asymptotic expansion. And I think that in my constructible functions that I had before, every asymptotic expansion is convergent. So I think this is really, this is not a formal claim that it's a transcendental function, but we believe that this is a new kind of function that comes up, but we are lucky if we add this kind of function and also slightly more generated where there is also a logarithm of y in the integrand, and the minus one is not so important, this should be just a rational number, then the complexity does not increase. So you can iterate integrals without increasing complexity. To give you a more precise statement of which functions we add. So we have rational numbers between minus 2 and minus 1, and that's a bit arbitrary. You just need rational numbers between an interval of length 1. And then we define a family of new functions gamma RL, where L is an integer. So an integrand of a similar easy form, you have x to the fractional power R, logarithm of x to the natural number power L, and here you have e to the power 2pi x. Oops, you can say, now there is a 2pi. Where does the 2pi come from? Well, actually, from now on, I want to focus on oscillating functions, so I put in a 2pi. But for the exponential periods, no 2pi is used. But in our theory, we can use any complex number A instead of 2pi. So everywhere where you see 2pi, you can put your favorite complex number A and define the functions gamma RL with the A here instead of 2pi, and everything works.
You don't use the fact that 2pi is a period.
I won't use the fact that 2pi is it a period? Well, my complex number is not a yeah.
Like, use a real number?
Yeah. Yeah, so you can have 2pi, you could put here, instead of 2pi, you can put the number 1. And then you're closer again to exponential periods, except that we are in a sub-analytic framework. So if you put here the number 1, then the gammas RL are exponential period functions. Technical condition, I want to avoid being close to 0, because then it's non-integrable. But on a bounded part, on the other hand, everything becomes sub-analytic, so this is really a good idea to throw away the interval minus 1, 1.
Why the order pair y1 and
y2? Y1 and y2 are real numbers? Is that the question?
Y on the left-hand side doesn't appear.
Y is equal to the tuple y1, y2. Yeah, thank you. And I allow also infinity for the boundaries. If it's integrable, I allow infinity. I'm not checking this here, but I checked it. Maybe it's always integrable. It should be always integrable. So I allow for plus and minus infinity. Let's now define our constructible functions. This time, I will not define an R algebra of functions. I will define an R module of functions. So I allow myself only to add functions, to add the generators. And this is the module of finite sums of functions of the following form. So x is a parameter running over my space x, and you send to products of three basic functions the gamma RL for some R and some L, where you plug in subanalytic functions g1 and g2. Then gi can of course take values in plus of minus infinity as well, so this is a slight generalization of subanalytic functions, but you can imagine what I mean. The argument of the exponential is, again, a subanalytic function. And I multiply with h, where h is a constructible function in the previous sense. So h is a product of subanalytic functions and logarithms of subanalytic functions and sums of such products. And this kind of function, I call it a generator, because it generates this R module. Of course, this is a bit annoying that you cannot multiply functions, but we are lucky. It's an algebra of functions.
At some point, I don't understand because you have real numbers and you have complex numbers.
Yeah, now I have complex valued functions.
Okay.
Yeah, the functions can be complex valued. It could be.
So you don't take an algebra, maybe a C algebra.
C algebra, yeah. It's an algebra of functions, and this is a corollary of the second point. Let's see at the second point. This is a similar result as for the constructible functions, but now it's stated for a generator. So let's look at the generator, phi. Suppose again that you have this integrability condition. So for each parameter, the function you obtain in the other variables should be integrable over Rm. Then the parameterized integral is an exponential constructible function, or it's in this algebra. And just with some flowers there, we think, or we hope, or we are working on the fact that we can remove the word generator there by some technique. But why is it more difficult to have a general element of Cx than to have a generator? Again, a general element of Cx is a sum of generators. And for a sum of things to be integrable, it's really different than each of the terms being integrable. So if you start up with a term which is integrable, then it's more easy to calculate the integral and to end up in the same algebra. But otherwise, you have to show that you can write it as a finite sum of things which are integrable and which are generators. So this is, I don't claim we can do it, but maybe there was a moment this week that I hoped we can do it. Let's go into the proof. So start with a generator, a function of this form, where we have variables x and y, you have the gamma, you have the e to the power something, and you have the h. The gamma itself is defined by an integral, so replace it by the integral by which it is defined. So this way you have more y variables, you have to integrate over more variables, but there is no function gamma anymore. So you can suppose that you're integrating with respect to many y variables, the product of an exponential and a constructible function. Now there is a very magical trick which every child can invent. And yeah, I think I am a child, but many people invent the same tricks. Do a piecewise change of variables where this function f, which appears as the argument of the exponential, becomes one of the new variables. Well, this is of course not a trick that you can invent, but I somehow had the inspiration that this would make it work, so in a definable context here. And what is this change of variables? Well, the new variables are all the variables you got before, with one y variable replaced by f. The Jacobian is the partial derivative of f with respect to dy I. And this is, of course, allowed on parts, if you partition into parts, where this Jacobian is different from zero and where it is made injective. But in a nominal context, you can make functions injective after partitioning into finitely many parts. If all the partial derivatives with respect to the yi are zero for all y, then, of course, after finite partitioning, the function only depends on on x. That's also because of O-minimal, the nonsense or generalities. Well, and of course you neglect things of measure zero, and basically you can partition the domain that you are in one of these cases. So essentially you can make this kind of change of variables. If you are in this case that f only depends on the x variables, there is nothing to do. You can put everything outside the integral, and there is not so much to prove. So the interesting case is that you really can do this piecewise change of, this change of variables on a certain part.
Injective, you mean in each fiber, or?
Yeah, if you fix x, the function in y should become injective. This reduces the question. Let me put it on the blackboard. So this reduces the question to an integral of e to the 2pi, and then I have my new variable yi prime. I have my function, a constructible function in x and y. Is that right? And I have dy1 up to dym. I can put all primes there. I can integrate all the variables out except yi, because that's a new thing. But for constructible functions, I know how to integrate. I remain constructible. So I can integrate all variables except dyi prime. So this one I skip. And this becomes some integral or of e to the 2pi yi times a constructible function only in the variable yi. And now I have an integral over the real numbers. So this reduces a multiple integral, which I already partially knew how to do, to a basic integral over the real line. So this gets closer. If I combine this now with the monomialization process, And I can apply the monomialization process to all the subanalytic functions which occur in this constructible function H. And my special variable is y. And recall, if I do a monomialization process, I had a translation theta of x coming up. But this theta of x does not really matter very much, because I can put e to the power theta x outside. So in some sense, I reduce to this kind of integral, that I have one variable y, I have a fractional power of y, I have y as a exponent, as argument of the exponential, I have a unit in x and y, and I have a logarithm of y to some power l. That's already closer to the gamma functions. This is almost the definition of the gamma function, except that here is this kind of analytic unit. But this analytic unit, after partitioning into cells, this is analytic in maybe not in x and y, but in maybe in x over y and y over x, or x over 1 minus I. So it becomes analytic, and you can actually write it as an infinite sum, and then you can reverse the order of the infinite sum and the integral, because the unit is so nice. It's really a good kind of unit. And then it becomes an infinite sum of aj, where now I have a plus j here. And this is really very close to the gamma functions, except that a plus g can be any rational number. And in the definition of the gamma functions, the exponent here was between minus 1 and minus 2. But you can either let this exponent go up or go down by partial integration, by doing integration by parts. So if you rewrite this integral, you can make it a fine sum of things, and the gamma, the real gammas appear. That's it for the real world. But the same works over the other local fields, over FQT, if characteristic is big enough, as we saw in Lazare's talk, over QP, over C. The same proofs and techniques apply. So monomialization process is crucial. Kind of Fubini theorem is important. You have the same notion of constructible function generated by definable functions and the logarithms of definable functions.
So for every QP or just large QP?
QP, it can be in fixed QP, or it can be automotivic level uniform in QP.
FQT has to be large
QP. Yeah, there it has to be big P. Yeah. The proofs have an algorithmic nature. Of course, working with subanalytic functions is not algorithmic, because an analytic function, you cannot put it into a computer. It's analytic. It's not given by finitely many data. And the algorithms are similar for each of the local fields. But the toughest conjecture in some parts of mathematics relate integrals over the Archimedean local fields to integrals over the non-Archimedean local fields. So this is another instance that really there is some kind of mysterious connection to prove these results. For all these local fields, the proofs are very similar. So this is an instance that these conjectures, they should be true in some form. But they are open already for a long time. Let's consider something else. Piadic periods, why not? It's the integral defined over Q, semi-algebraic functions defined over Q. But this is not so interesting, because actually, alpha lies automatically in Q, so it's algebraic, so no trans.
It's already a trademark for some different periodic periods.
Yeah, this is a trademark for a different notion of.
But I think the trademark is already deposed, so you're not allowed to use this terminology.
Okay, so let's call this stupid periodic periods. So there is not much to do, but you could ask decidability questions when you work uniform in P. And then you're at the level of motivic integration. And let me give an oscillating example of motivic integrals. We have seen how to compute motivic integrals, but this will be just an elementary example. So I start with f of x, which is a polynomial over the integers, and x are many variables. I don't know the index, maybe n. And I consider finite exponential sums. So for any natural number m, so m is a natural number, I can look at an exponential sum modulo m. Why do I call it modulo m? Well, in the argument of the exponential, I have this integer f of x, which I divide by m. So these are complex numbers on the unit circle. You get m points on the unit circle, possible points on the unit circle, and they are quite chaotically distributed, and you sum them up for all variables running from 0 to m minus 1. These are chaotic exponential sums, but motivic integration calculates all these number cm. So that's what it's all about. At the cost of calculating building blocks, so you have to calculate something. And what you have to calculate are similar exponential sums, but only modulo primes. So not modulo any integer m, but modulo primes. And then, of course, to get cm, you will need a prime factorization of m into primes, and you will use the building blocks to deduce cm from it. And the building blocks are of a similar nature, where you have, instead of a polynomial, you have definable functions, you have finitely many building blocks, and then the number cm depend on a quite nice way of the building blocks and a prime factorization of the number m. So very naively, so the cm is a certain algorithm to determine from the building blocks the number cm, so that's capital F. And naively, this capital F, you could call this the motivic integral. But let me put this here, but because you can read this, motivic integration does a bit more. But this is naively. And then you could ask yourself, is it decidable if you have two algorithms to compute the numbers cm, f prime and f, do they satisfy an equation uniform in m? For example, this is one transcendental over the other. But motivic integration does more, like we saw in the beautiful talks. It gives precise meaning to all these objects. So this is just very vague, saying that you have an algorithm to compute numbers, but it gives a geometric meaning to these things. And then to tell you something to end, this is the last slide. Some of the biggest conjectures relate Archimedean integrals to non-Archimedean integrals. And this is an example of such a conjecture, the monodromy conjecture. You can have, for the number cm, when m is a varying power of a prime p, so m is p to the power a, and a can be varying over the natural numbers, you can get an asymptotic expansion for cm for m going to infinity. On the other hand, you have this Archimedean integral, where phi is a Schwarz function, just meaning a function which goes rapidly to zero, that it makes everything integrable. And you have the same kind of oscillating factor here. Instead of dividing fx by m, you're multiplying it with y, and you let y go to infinity, and you get a similar kind of asymptotic expansion. And on the periodic side, this asymptotic expansion look like p to the power a to some other powers, and a can also occur as a factor. And on the Archimedean level, the asymptotic expansion looks like powers of y and powers of logarithm of y. And the monodromy conjecture relates the exponents that occur, that there is a link between the exponents ai here, ai there, and li there, and li there. So this gives you some concrete feeling about a concrete instance of relating Archimedean and non-Archimedean integrals. And I will stop here.
It's not a question, it's just a comment on the last remark by Raf. I mean, it's written AI on the two lines and LI also, but they're not the same.
Yeah, they're not the same.
And what the Vandermeer conjecture says is that the AIs are appearing on the first line, they do appear as AIs on the second line.
Yeah.
So this is exactly what the Vandermeer conjecture says, and it's absolutely open.
So there should be an inclusion.
Yes. So maybe you should not have written AI on the both lines. So it's not clear at all that they are the same, and one set is included in the other one conjecturally.
But you can write the CM as exactly the same by the integral over between.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So the
CM, yeah, is an epiadic integral.
Exactly the same one as written below for Rn? Or
yeah, I can try to write it on the blackboard. This is, on the epiadic numbers, you also have x 2pi, as Francois explained, fx times y, integrated, you integrate with respect to the Haar measure in the x variables, let's say over zpn to make it compactly supported. This is an integral depending on y, and then the link with the notation there is that y should be p to the power minus a. This means that y in this notation, y goes to infinity, so you get the perfect analog on here, y goes, in the Archimedean case, y goes to infinity as well. Yeah.